This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being with us. Maybe it's time to give our kids a real break this summer break. In research from the fall, nearly a third of parents responded that their child's mental and emotional health was worse than before the pandemic. The Kaiser Family Foundation points out that that can manifest as irritability or fear, even problems sleeping or appetite issues. We're talking about how to help our kids, especially teenagers, deal with this stage of the pandemic this summer. Our guest says we got to cut them some slack. You can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. How are your teenagers feeling as the pandemic enters this next stage? Are you thinking about this summer differently for teenagers than you maybe would have in the past? And if you are a teenager, what are your plans? What do you want people to understand about what you've gone through? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Lisa DeMore joins us now. She's a psychologist, a best-selling author, a New York Times columnist, and host of the podcast Ask Lisa, The Psychology of Parenting. Lisa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be with you.
Really broad generalization here. You spent a lot of time as a psychologist working with adolescents. How are teenagers doing right now?
I think they're doing better, actually, than they were. I think school wrapping up is a huge relief for them. This year has been unbelievably difficult. Pretty much no matter how kids did school, it was really hard, though there were better and worse versions of it. So I think in this moment, as they are either done with school or counting the days till they're done with school, I'm seeing relief in a lot of young people.
But that relief is coming because they have been under a lot of pressure and also a lot of inconsistency we've seen throughout the year, right?
It's been all over the map, you know, and even for a single kid, it's been all over the map. One week they're in, the next week they're out. You know, they go on some days, not others. They aren't going at all to school and yet are waiting to find out if schools are going to open. I mean, it has been unbelievably demanding just in terms of adaptation, how much we've asked young people to figure out how to do their lives in all new ways.
And every school year, you kind of, I think, hit that slog at the end where you just have to keep moving. You've got a lot of big tests and things like that. And so you do have to kind of push through and you do get worn down. But is this year different than years of the past?
Absolutely. I have practiced for a really long time. I have never seen young people as absolutely spent as they are right now. Getting through the year, learning as they did. Kids learned a lot this year, even under strange conditions. Doing school without all the fun stuff. I've thought about school this year as being all vegetables, no dessert. You know, all of the work, all of the assignments, none of the playing in the halls, none of the seeing the crush in class. They have really been incredible in terms of what they have delivered to adults. And they have gotten so little of the fun parts of being teenagers this year. And they're wiped out. They are absolutely wiped out.
So now we've hit summer. How important is this summer?
It's so important, not just from the mental health perspective. Like we really need them to not feel this kind of strain and distress and, you know, kind of bluntly misery of you know, just doing all the hard parts and none of the fun parts. But it's really important if we want to get the resilience that we've been talking about. You know, there's this narrative, and I think it's a good narrative that like, hey, you know, these young people are going to be a lot more resilient as a result of going through the pandemic. I think for most kids, this is true. But it's not something that just magically happens when the pandemic ends. The way I want us to think about resilience, and this is true for people of all ages, is in some ways to think about it like strength training. You know, you go to the gym, you lift heavy weights, and then you rest to let those muscles repair and rebuild, and then you are stronger. And emotional resilience works the same way. You go through something horrible and hard and long, like a global pandemic. You get out the other side, you get to safety, and then you rest. You take it in. You reflect on it. You construct a narrative of what had happened and what it meant to you and what you learned about yourself. You grieve. And then the resilience comes. But without that interval, without that recovery, without that reflection, they're just going to be burned out.
Lisa DeMore is a psychologist and also host of a podcast about the psychology of parenting. And we're talking about teenagers now that it's summertime. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about your teenager's mental or physical health after this school year in the pandemic? Did you have to work through some things? What are you trying to plan for the summer to maybe give them an opportunity to recover? You can give us a call now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Lisa, you talk about recovering and having that time. What does that look like? Because I do think that sometimes in the summertime, if you see your kid sleeping a lot and doing very little, it's hard to understand if that's recovery or if that's just kind of, you know, relaxing and not doing something important.
It's a tough call, right? And I think a lot of it is that it comes down to kid by kid. In my most recent New York Times column on this topic about, you know, giving kids a break, you know, and I made the argument in that column that it's going to look different for every kid. So many people in the comments said, oh, this is so true. One of my teenagers is going to recover this summer by being really busy. That's what they like to do. You know, seeing friends, getting a job, that puts gas in my kid's tank. My other teenager is really needing to just relax and rest and read and have time where they're not owing anybody anything, just so that they can get their feet under them. And so I think a lot of it is you got to know your kid or you got to know your individual kids. And as you look at them and look at their plans and look at what you're asking them to do, and we do need to ask teenagers to do things. It's not that all bets are off. The question I want people to be asking is, does this help my kid fill their tank again so they can go back into the fall restored? Or is my kid who is already on fumes continuing to grind away in a way that is actually going to leave them in worse shape in September than they are right now?
Some people know their kids, their teenagers really well. And even then, maybe we think we know more than we do. How can we talk to teenagers about what they need so we can figure out how to get that to them?
I think the best thing about teenagers, I adore teenagers. So there's a lot to like about teenagers. But one of my favorite things about teenagers is if you ask them a straight question, they will usually give you an incredibly straight answer. And that's, you know, not everybody likes that about teenagers.
Right.
And so I would say to your kid, you know, either in a formal way or in a more casual way, say, look, what do you need this summer to feel good by fall? What's going to really help you feel back where you want to be? And trust your kid. Really trust them to know themselves. And if they say, I will be playing video games 12 hours a day, you can say, we should probably negotiate on that one. But start from a position of seeing your teenager as someone who wants to feel good, wants to restore themselves, wants to get back to the strength they've had, or in fact, be stronger as a result of what they've been through. One of the ways I think about teenagers all the time is that they have two sides. They have a philosophical, broad-minded, growth-oriented, mature side. And they have, you know, sometimes a petty or immature or impulsive side. And the side of the teenager you speak to is the side that shows up for the conversation. So I would speak to that broad-minded, growing side and say, what do you need? What's going to get you where you want to be by September?
And trust the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yep, trust them. Trust them.
Psychologist Lisa DeMore is our guest this hour of the morning show. We're talking about how teenagers especially can spend the summer easing up on some expectations, offering teens some space to deal with real trauma that's happened in this pandemic. What's your story? You can call 800-642-1234. Parents, are you negotiating rules with your kids this summer? Have you had this kind of a conversation yet? Maybe you don't quite know how to go about it. We can answer your questions at 800-642-1234, or you can send them to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. Thanks for being with us for this conversation on the Ideas Network. A psychologist who specializes in adolescents says this summer, parents should be ready to adjust their demands on teenagers. It's been a tough time, and she argues that backing off a little could really benefit our kids. It also helps the rest of us when we step back and stop guilt from destroying the time we have outside of school and outside of work. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is a psychologist who's written books on parenting and hosts a podcast about it. You can join this conversation with Lisa DeMore by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions and your experiences. I want to welcome Marcus in Milwaukee now. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. So I'm a single father. I have five children, divorced. But what I found works with the older ones, besides just asking them what do they need from me or what would help them, I also found that it's beneficial to present my side and say, you know, this is what I need from you, and then give that mature, growing side the opportunity to take and reason it out so that we can come to a compromise as opposed to being, you know, like authoritarian top down. And so that you get better buy-in when you explain why you need certain things rather than do it because I said so.
Oh, Marcus, thanks for sharing that. And Lisa, what do you hear in Marcus's strategy here?
I hear really good parenting is what I hear. You know, what I hear is, you know, that speaking to the mature side of the teenager. You know, we're a team. I'm going to need your help. Here's the kind of help I could use from you. Here's why I need the help. Teenagers rise to expectations, and they also can sink to expectations. When we treat them like they're going to be irresponsible and difficult, they can usually meet us right there. When we treat them as partners in family life who can help make the gears of family life move forward, they are often excellent about joining us in that place. And they do well when they understand why we're asking. I love what Marcus said about not doing it from a top-down position, not flexing on teenagers. I think it's very easy as adults to assert our authority over teenagers. And for most teenagers, they find that to be a provocative gesture from adults. Even if it's a really easygoing teenager who's generally not that easily annoyed, as soon as an adult sort of rolls up on them and tries to just, you know, flex power because they're an adult, that tends to rub even pretty mild-mannered teenagers the wrong way.
Marcus, thanks so much for the call at 800-642-1234. We have Bill in Superior on the line now who wants to join the conversation. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I understand that children, you know, I have, you know, 13-year-old of my own, that they need fun. They need to get out, stretch their legs, do what they need to do. But we also need to understand that we are preparing these, you know, soon-to-be adults for the reality that the world is a cruel, cruel place. And we also need to, you know, give them that reality. And there's just, it just seems like there's too much negotiating going on with kids. And, you know, they just need the structure and discipline, because you're not going to negotiate with your boss when you show up late or you refuse to do the work. I mean, they need to be taught, you know, the rigors of real life as well, instead of, you know, the 10th place ribbon rhetoric.
Bill, thanks for bringing this point up, because, Lisa, it is true that part of our job is to prepare kids for the real world, and it is also true that they're still kids. So how do we walk that line so that we don't wind up with kids who are not prepared to handle the expectations of our society, of our real lives?
Great question. So, you know, we have studied outcomes, you know, what parenting decisions lead to particular outcomes in adulthood for decades now. And we probably have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of studies on this at this point. And if you threw them all into a giant machine and got that machine to synthesize the major findings, probably the major finding about what kids need at home in order to thrive in the world beyond the home is warmth and structure, both. So in terms of warmth, it's really good for kids if they feel like we like them and we want to be with them and we enjoy their company. And in terms of structure, and this is exactly what Bill's getting at, kids also need to understand the way the world works, that there are rules and expectations, that there are people who you have to answer to, that there are limits on, you know, behavior. There are things that are okay and not okay. And so the goal as a parent is to try to balance those two things in your home. You know, you want life to be at home to be pleasant, but you don't want it to be, you know, unbelievably permissive because that makes everybody happy all the time. It really is trying to balance those two things. And I will say that in most family life, I would try to go for like a B+ average on both of these. You know, so some days it's going to be really warm. Other days you're going to be kind of cranky with your kids. Some days you're going to really have high expectations and everybody's going to meet them. Other days you're going to feel frustrated that it feels a little loosey-goosey around the house. But if the target is overall warmth and structure, we then see young people who can leave your home and do two things. Number one is they can work for bosses, even bosses who are unpleasant because they're accustomed to structure and they know how to work within it. And then the other is when they have options about relationships, they bend themselves into loving relationships. They find those. And that's because of the warmth that we provided at home. We want them to know what a good, loving relationship feels like. And we do that by providing those in family life.
Lisa DeMore is a clinical psychologist, and we're talking about how to support teenagers this summer, especially as they're dealing with all of those regular teenage things in addition to a pandemic. Your questions, your thoughts are welcome. You can call 800-642-1234. And Lisa, as we talk about preparing kids for, I guess what we're calling the real world, although they live in the real world too, a part of the real world is grief and loss. And that is very much something that kids have dealt with in this pandemic. How do we help teens grieve?
So there's been so much loss in the pandemic, you know, and as I've thought about the pandemic nonstop, like everyone else, I've thought like, man, like this thing's about loss, right? Loss at every level for everybody, you know, that, you know, loss of jobs and opportunities, you know, the loss of people we love to the pandemic, the loss of plans. And for teenagers, it's been about a very particular kind of loss, you know, and of course, individual teenagers have had their own losses. But a lot of being a teenager involves once in a lifetime things that you're very excited about and maybe have been looking forward to and that cannot be rescheduled. And so not that we're, you know, comparing miseries, but I think we need to be mindful that the pandemic has been a very particular experience for teenagers. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm 50 years old. Whatever I didn't do this year, I can do next year. You know, I can reschedule things and make up trips or opportunities or things like that. But for especially starting by about sixth grade, certainly seventh and up, those years, every year there's something that happens in that year and does not happen again. You know, whether it's the eighth grade graduation or a special convention you get to go to as a 10th grader or things like proms, homecomings, school plays, and they're gone, absolutely gone. They're never coming back. And so kids have really had to absorb losses at that level and lots of them. I mean, I think that's the thing that's so striking to me about the length of the pandemic. Kids lost a lot over those 15 months that they were, you know, trying to manage the pandemic, and many still are. So there's that. And then there's also, you know, the loss of friendships that are not going to be rekindled. And then, of course, there's the loss of life. So what we want to be focusing on is the fact that grief is a productive process, that to feel sad about what one has lost or those we've lost is not a descent into depression. It is a coming to terms with what it means to not have that opportunity or that person as part of one's life. And we really make a distinction between sadness around mourning and grieving versus sadness that has no particular shape and is just a worrisome depression or something we want to be evaluating. So if your kid is sad about losses, it's okay. And you can trust that when it comes to mourning and grief, the way out is through. Let them talk about what they lost. Let them get together with their friends and talk about what didn't happen this year. And trust that that will open up the door to being interested in new things. But first, they have to, and a lot of adults have to, come to terms with what couldn't happen or didn't happen or was lost as a result of the pandemic.
Lisa DeMore is a psychologist. She's also a best-selling author and columnist for The New York Times. She stays with us as we talk about parenting in the summertime, well, particularly this summer, and how to give teenagers what they need. Now is the time to call 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about adolescents struggling with anxiety or depression? Are you concerned about your teenager this summer? How do you want to know how to talk to them? Maybe you are a teenager and you want adults to recognize something. We'll hear you. 800-642-1234. We welcome you here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show. News is next. The teenage years are defined by incredible change and growth. Now put that in the context of a pandemic, with so much of what we used to call normal turned upside down and inside out, and life has just been a lot for kids today. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Our guest says we should give teenagers room to process what they've been through in this stage of the pandemic. Psychologist Lisa DeMore says they need a break. What are you seeing? You can call 800-642-1234. We're also taking your questions about how to work with teenagers and talk with them and figure out what's going on so that they can be supported all summer long. That number again is 800-642-1234. You could also send us an email. The address is ideas@wpr.org. Lisa, you've written extensively on anxiety in teens. How has anxiety played out for teenagers in this pandemic?
I think for teenagers and adults, this has been a very anxious time, and with good reason. One of the things that we know about anxiety as psychologists is that it's actually a normal and healthy emotion, and that is not something we've done a great job of making clear to the general public. But anxiety is an alarm system that we all come equipped with that keeps us safe. It lets us know when something's not right. And it's uncomfortable. Having your heart start to, pound in your chest and your breathing get quick and shallow doesn't feel good. But that discomfort is attention getting, and it does things like remind us to grab a mask on the way out the door, or, drive safely, or, reduce speed, or things like that. So we do generally see anxiety as adaptive and productive and protective. What's hard is when we are faced with something like a lethal virus and we don't have a lot of information about how it works, or we're worried about the implications of contracting it or spreading it. It means that our anxiety alarm rings a lot, and that becomes very harrowing to feel a high sense of anxiety over an extended period of time. Anxiety works much better in short, informative bursts as opposed to the pervasive anxiety that so many of us have been living with this past year.
What can teenagers do to try to manage that?
It's very helpful just out of the gate to appreciate that anxiety usually is a logical reaction. And the reason I say that is that one of the problems that we came into the pandemic with was a pretty significant misunderstanding around anxiety, that there is a very widely held view in the culture that anxiety is always pathological. It's always a sign that something's wrong, that you're really supposed to feel calm. And that view isn't accurate. And the upshot of that view is that when teenagers and adults had normal, healthy anxiety about COVID and its implications, they would feel the anxiety, and then they would sometimes feel anxious about feeling anxious. Like, oh no, I've got anxiety, capital A, diagnosable anxiety. And that's not the case. So the first thing to know is that anxiety is adaptive and productive and helpful. The second thing to know is that we have a very clear sense of when that stops being true. So there are only two conditions where people need to worry about anxiety, that maybe it's crossed the line from healthy to unhealthy. One condition is if everything's okay and anxiety persists. So to the degree that anxiety is an alarm, it should be a good alarm. It should ring when there's something wrong. It shouldn't ring the rest of the time. So if that is happening, I would say absolutely consult with a professional. We really know what to do. We're actually very good at treating anxiety. The second condition where we worry about anxiety is if there's something wrong and the anxiety alarm rings, but the ringing is way out of proportion to what's wrong. So to bring it back to, you know, normal life with adolescents, you know, on the way into a quiz or a test, we would want a teenager to be a little anxious, you know, to sort of take it seriously, to care about what happens. We don't want them having a panic attack under those conditions. And again, if it crosses that threshold, if anxiety becomes unhealthy, it's happening for no reason or it's way too big for what's happening, people don't need to worry that this is something they're stuck with. We are really able to help people manage anxiety. We're able to do it through talk therapy, medication if needed, sometimes the combination. But of all the things that we treat in psychology, we probably know more about and are more effective in treating anxiety than almost anything.
How do you apply that to this pandemic? Because we are by no means out of the woods, and yet we are in a completely different place than we were at the beginning or even last fall when we still didn't know a lot and vaccines were still in development. So we're not in a place where that anxiety should be able to fully go away, but we have to somehow bring ourselves out of the being really worked up and worried all the time. And I imagine that that has to be really difficult to do for teenagers.
It does. And partly because teenagers feel emotions more intensely than adults do. You know, it's sort of their emotional superpower. And so when it's an unpleasant emotion like anxiety or sadness, that's not so fun for teenagers because they feel it very acutely. I have memories. You may have memories. You know, teenagers also feel pleasurable emotions much more intensely than adults do. You know, sort of the thrill of driving is something that I don't think you really ever quite recapture later in life as you do when you're an adolescent. But what we want to be mindful of at this point in the pandemic is one of the most fundamental principles around anxiety is that avoidance actually feeds anxiety. Avoidance in the short term relieves anxiety and in the long term can actually entrench it. And so when all of the stay-at-home orders started to come down, you know, 15 plus months ago, as a psychologist, I was like, okay, this is fantastic public health policy. I support it totally. There's going to be some back end that we have to deal with, some fallout on the psychological side. Because when you avoid, you feel better, right? When you think about going to the grocery store and worry about contamination or picking up COVID, and you think, okay, never mind, I'll just order groceries, there's a relief that comes with that. And that relief is fundamentally reinforcing, meaning that we want to do it again. You know, if it feels good or offers relief, we want to repeat that experience, which is fine when it makes sense. The problem, though, is that as it stops making sense, as we have ways to know that the grocery store is safe and ways to know that we can keep ourselves safe, what it requires is that we stop avoiding and we face our fears. And that's the other way in which avoidance can actually entrench anxiety, is that if you continue to avoid the thing you're frightened of, whatever you imagine about that thing, your daydream about how, you know, the viral cesspool that is the grocery store goes completely unchallenged. So where we are right now is that people need to start to wade back in, take baby steps back in to the things that they have been avoiding and check it out. Don't get that relief of avoidance. If you have not been to the grocery store for a long time, you know, you can go slow. You can go in and grab yourself an apple on your first shop. You can just check it out. You don't have to do a whole first shop. But that's where we are. Our anxiety at this point is in all likelihood a bit exaggerated by long-term avoidance.
Lisa Damore is a psychologist, also a New York Times columnist who's spent 2 decades as a psychologist working specifically with adolescents. She also hosts a podcast about the psychology of parenting. And we are talking about all things teenagers and parenting here on the Ideas Network as we embrace summer and figure out what that looks like at this stage of the pandemic. Your questions are welcome at 800-642-1234. We'll take calls from parents about what you're thinking about this summer, how it might be different or the same for your teenagers. What questions do you have about talking with them or figuring out where boundaries are, negotiating rules? Maybe you are a teenager or you were one from a long time ago. Help us understand what you think is important as we think about teenage health in this pandemic. 800-642-1234. As we try to help teenagers get back into some of those habits, those things that we might have said for more than a year, you can't do this, or you need to be more isolated than this. How can we help teenagers set goals for themselves so that they can push their own boundaries in a healthy, safe way?
I would go with the idea of the wade in, you know, that they can just, they don't have to dive in the deep end if they haven't seen a lot of peers for a long time. Maybe starting at a party is not the right move. You know, maybe going on a, you know, going out to walk around the neighborhood with a good friend is probably a good place to start. And what we usually find is that with a little exposure, as we call it, a little, you know, kind of checking out the world and discovering that it's safer than one thought it was, that then people kind of find their way back in. And I think that's been a lot of people's experience lately, that at first they were nervous about getting together with people. And then quickly they realize, like, oh, okay, this is all right. And I'm a little out of practice with it. And now I'm out here practicing these skills and they're all coming back. If, though, you run into a teenager who is really struggling, who is not able to even take those first baby steps back into the world, what you want to do is to help them evaluate the situation rationally, because there's a good chance, and of course it comes down to the individual and their particular situation, but there's a good chance that their anxiety has become irrational at this point. And our definition of irrational anxiety is really straightforward. The definition is that we overestimate the risk and we underestimate our ability to manage the risk. And so, you know, if you say to your adolescent, like, I need you to run to the store, and they're like, definitely not, I'm not setting foot in a grocery store, you might say, okay, talk to me. Like, what do you think is going to happen at that grocery store? What do you think the reality is of the dangers of a grocery store? And in all likelihood, they will articulate an overestimated risk that you can then bring reality to bear on. And then you can say, look, if you're worried about people getting near you, right, if that's your fear, that the grocery store will be crowded, what can you do to manage that risk? You know, can you go when you're not in a rush so that you can wait and create space and not feel like you've got to, you know, crowd around people? There's a lot you yourself can do to keep the situation under control. So the goal here for teenagers and for all of us is not that we feel calm. You know, we don't know we're ready because we're calm. We know we're ready because we've gotten our anxiety down to a level that we can tolerate, so that we can go check the situation out while reassuring ourselves that it's probably not as dangerous as we have feared, and it should be by now less dangerous, and we have more power than we have had in the past to keep ourselves safe.
Lisa Damore is a psychologist. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about how we can give teenagers what they need this summer, maybe by backing off a bit on what we want them to do and achieve, really by talking to them about what they need. There's still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Join us now on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about parenting in the summertime and how we can help kids process and recover from so much isolation and uncertainty. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is psychologist and author Lisa Damore, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. We've got Paul in La Crosse ready to join the conversation. Hey, Paul.
Hi. I just think teenagers need to, like, find a outlet, like a hobby, And if they have a best friend, most teenagers have one of those best friends that they tell everything to. They need to do that outlet or hobby with them, and then it'll bring back a sense of, or maybe a little bit back, a sense of normalcy back to their routine.
Paul, thanks for the suggestion. Lisa, what about hobbies, those things that we just love to do? How important is that for teenagers this summer?
I love when teenagers have hobbies. And when I think of a hobby, I think of something that a teenager is doing just for their own joy and enrichment and fulfillment, that it's not for some college application. It's not because it's been assigned. And when I see teenagers looking to build self-esteem, which is such a fragile thing sometimes in adolescence, often it's around developing a hobby where the self-esteem comes. Because even if they're doing really well by measures that adults have created for them or on assignments that adults have given them, I so often see teenagers feel like, well, I did it because you told me to do it. So I don't necessarily take great pride in what I've done. Whereas I think about a teenage girl I cared for who on her own time would figure out how to play pop songs on her violin. And no one assigned this to her. It didn't count for credit anywhere. And the real kind of marrow deep pleasure and pride she took in doing it was such an incredible source of self-esteem, much more so than things that other people had asked her to do. So I love it when teenagers had hobbies. Paul also mentioned having a best friend you can tell things to. Mm. This is so important. And one of the things you heard psychologists talk about all through the pandemic is social support, everybody needs good social support. And I think too often we don't actually say the rest of what needs to be said on that, which is we don't mean you need a big, busy social life. And I think that's often what's assumed, that social support means you have a lot of people around you. When we look at the data, it is all about quality, not about quantity. And we know this, right? We know this of people who have big social networks and are, you know, have a lot of people in their lives and yet feel quite lonely. And then people who maybe don't look like they've got a lot going on socially, but like, you know, they've got a couple people in their lives and they feel very fulfilled. So what Paul said about like being able to tell that person something is spot on. When we look at the question of quality and social support, what we see is that what people need, everyone needs three things. They need someone they can tell their worries to, someone they can tell their secrets to, and a person or a group who helps them to feel connected and accepted. And that's what a best friend can be. And so what I would say, especially to parents or teens who are worried that they've maybe fallen away a bit from a broader social network and that recovering from the pandemic will look like, you know, plugging back into this broad, broad world, I would say, no, it's all right. Like if you've got one or two people that you really feel a good, solid social connection with, you're in great shape. Everything beyond that is like icing on your social cake. But I don't want adults or teenagers to feel that the way to do socializing right is to be popular or part of a big group or kind of maintaining many social ties. It's really about the quality, vastly more than the quantity.
We're talking about how to support teenagers, especially with what they need so they can recover this summer after quite an unprecedented year. We're talking with Lisa DeMore, who's a psychologist who specializes in adolescence. And I want to welcome Anne from Campbellsport on the line now. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Good morning. I have a nephew who is extremely anxious about going out. He lives in Milwaukee, and there have been so many random shootings. He is terrified to leave his house, to even go for a walk. And I'm wondering, how can you possibly help him work through that?
Yeah, and thank you for that question. And we should note that so far in 2021, more than 70 people have been shot and killed in that area of our state. So it is something that we're paying attention to and that public health officials are trying to figure out and account for. But that's the context for Anne's question. Lisa, what about her nephew?
First of all, I mean, just I'm so sorry, right? I hate hearing this on so many levels. So the question then is his anxiety irrational? Is he overestimating the danger and underestimating his ability to manage that danger? And I don't know the context as well as you do. I don't know the dangers as well as you do. But before we treat this as though this poor child is somehow, you know, suffering from anxiety in a form that is pathological, meaning it's illogical, I do think there's a real question here about his safety, and maybe he's having the right feeling at the right time. And that's an important thing for us to be mindful of, that mental health is actually not that one feels good. It's that one's feelings are appropriate to the circumstance. And then hopefully there's an effective way to manage those feelings. I would hate to think, though it may very well be his circumstance, that the effective way to manage those feelings is to stay indoors because the situation feels so dangerous, or in fact is so dangerous. What we want to find for him is a more effective way to manage the situation, which would mean, I think, ultimately creating a vastly more safe environment for him to live in.
And certainly that's not necessarily possible for everyone when it comes to these big, broader societal challenges. So how do we start to even support people, teenagers who are dealing with that level of anxiety? But they can't always stay at home, right? Like, we have to keep doing things. So there's the reality, the recognition of the mental health, but also the reality that sometimes we do have to leave the house.
Absolutely. So the way we want to think about chronic stressors, which is what if we're going to take what the caller described and put it into a psychological terminology, there are things, extraordinarily difficult things that go on around us all the time. And if we focus on them exclusively, it can become actually quite, we can get really stuck. So what we know from the research about managing chronic stressors is that you say, you look at the situation and you say, okay, what of this can I control? What of this is beyond my control? And the things that one can control, you go at those things. So it may be, I don't know the circumstances of the shootings, and I hate that we're even having to parse it at this level, that it's something that happens late day, that the chances of an early day event are dramatically lower than later in the day. So there's some information that maybe could be useful in terms of going out and about in a way that might feel comparatively safer. So that's how we think about broad, frightening experiences. What do I have power over? What is beyond my power? The stuff I can control, I'm going to be as creative in that space as I possibly can. The stuff I can't control, I am going to do what I can to not pour too much energy into that, but to preserve my energy for the parts of this that are under my control.
Lisa, I want to thank you for your advice and for taking us through working through really difficult things, but also trying to help us embrace the joy with our teenagers this summer. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Lisa DeMore is a psychologist. She's also a best-selling author and a columnist for The New York Times. She hosts a podcast called Ask Lisa, The Psychology of Parenting. And we talked throughout the hour about giving teenagers what they need this summer as they work through what's happened with school and home life and the greater world during the COVID-19 pandemic and beyond. I'm Keeley Boltina. Thanks for spending your time with us here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.